You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.
Hello and welcome to the Effective Statistician Podcast. My name's Alan Bedding and I'm sitting in for Alexander, where I will be exploring things that can help a statistician become more effective. Today, I'm welcoming a guest, my friend Emma Crawford, who was on a recent episode of the podcast talking about why and how you can promote more students to become statisticians. In a couple of weeks' time, Emma and myself will be at the PSI conference, where Emma will be leading a session entitled Inclusive Work Cultures Where Everyone Thrives, I think it is. And today we are going to discuss that topic. So Emma, maybe I can ask for you to begin to introduce yourself and say why this is important for us to focus on inclusive cultures.
Thanks, Alan. Hi, my name's Emma Crawford. I am a woman in her mid-30s with pink hair and glasses based in London. And yeah, why I think this topic is important is that I myself, a couple of years ago, got a late diagnosis of autism. And I guess I had always struggled, right recently been struggling more in the workplace, and had always put that down to something wrong with me not being able to do the same as other people. But that prompted me to get my diagnosis because of some struggles at work, starting to get things kind of promoted to me online through social media, through the algorithms, started to read more about neurodivergence, about autism, about ADHD, and started to kind of really reflect on those experiences and notice them in myself. And so that's what prompted me to get my diagnosis. And obviously, since I received that diagnosis towards the end of 2023, obviously, I've been trying to explore what that means for me, not just in the workplace, but also personally, and how I can help best set myself up for success. Last year, Alan, we both had the privilege of being part of a plenary session at the PSI conference on diversity in the workplace. That sparked a lot of great conversations at the PSI conference that had never been taken place before. It was the first time this sort of discussion topic had been brought to that audience. And I think, yeah, based off of the back of those conversations, myself and a few others were really inspired that we wanted to keep that conversation going and not let it drop off. So we started brainstorming for the session we're bringing this year about the inclusive work cultures. We wanted to expand it beyond that neurodiversity topic for everybody, because inclusion is for everyone. It just so happens that that's also coincided with PSI choosing to invest in D&I as well. I am now leading their new D&I working group, where we're going to be looking at how we can work with PSI to make sure all PSI members feel included and have a sense of belonging. It's now great working with that group as well to help drive that forward within the statistics community.
Fantastic. I know myself that there's such a big push to DEI and the B piece as well, DEIB, the International Coaching Federation, and have it as part of their core values to be as inclusive as possible. I think that session last year, you know, as well, I had a late diagnosis as well. And, you know, I think that session last year really brought that to a head. And like you say, that was the first time that was brought to that type of audience. I think it's a positive thing that we've now got this session coming up at the conference. What does it mean to be inclusive?
I think this is something that we've been discussing a lot as we've been planning for the session, and there's been some great discussions across this topic. And I think for me, the main thing that being inclusive means to me, at least, and being representative, is being flexible and open-minded. Most of us work in large corporate companies or even smaller companies. Gone are the days of everyone being forced to be in that same kind of corporate box and to work in the same way. The working dynamics, especially since COVID, have changed a lot. We've got a lot more tools and options available to us. And I think we need to be better at utilizing those and making sure that it works for everybody. There are some groups that are more protected or entitled to changes in the workplace to make it equitable for them. So under the UK, we've got the Disability Equality Act, which does give anyone who recognizes themselves as having a disability the chance to have reasonable adjustments. But I think for me, that whole premise still has a long way to go to making things fully inclusive, because you're telling people, hey, you're struggling with the workplace. It's not accessible for you. So you need to go through this formal and arduous process to request some reasonable adjustments just to maybe allow you a equitable chance to do your job.
Yeah.
Still then puts a lot of pressure on that person to do that when there's not a lot of understanding in workplaces about various conditions and how best to support people. It's put on the individual to know what support they need when they may have been struggling, like I was, for so long with not knowing I had a neurodivergence and having best to support myself. Now I'm supposed to be the expert in telling people exactly what I need to be able to do my job well. I've got this newfound knowledge about myself. I'm still learning, but I'm by no means an expert. It's very much a trial and see process. But
that word expert's an odd one, isn't it? Because it puts extra pressure on yourself.
Yeah. So the reasonable adjustments process is still not great for an inclusive mindset. I think what I've heard on a podcast before was thinking it more of about success enablers and giving people the tools and ways of working they need to thrive in the workplace. And I really resonated with that. To me, that definitely sums up inclusion, because success enablers shouldn't just be for, say, persons with disabilities who are entitled to that under the Equality Act. It should be for everybody, because everyone has different preferences or needs in the workplace. You may be a parent flexing childcare around work, and that gives you your own preferences and needs. You may be working in a different time zone to somebody else, the rest of your team, that gives you different needs. People have different preferences now of how they like to work and how they like to do things. I think being inclusive is being open to that and working with your teams to get the best out of everybody and supplying them with the tools to be able to do so. Openness and flexibility to try things out and to try and work with everyone to get the best out of them is really the key mindset of inclusion, so that people don't have to ask to be like, hey, can we do this differently for me? We should just be having inclusive, accessible practices from the start that make everyone feel welcome and invited and doesn't feel like a barrier to anybody to be able to take part in anything or to do anything that they need to at work.
Wouldn't it be great if we could reverse this back around? So it's actually the leaders who are asking the people, well, what do you need to do your best work?
Yeah, that would be great. That's the thing. At the moment, this reasonable adjustments process is very bottom up, relying on the individual to push those requests up. And maybe, but you'll find most reasonable adjustments, especially a lot that I've been recommended from different professionals and advisors, are actually just reasonable ways of working, like having an agenda for every meeting, making sure that there is slides shared ahead so I can pre-read and digest the information, especially if there's discussion, making sure that there's minutes or recordings that are accessible, and like even simple little things on the recordings, making sure that there's captions enabled. I can't listen to things at normal speaking rate. If I'm listening to them back, I will zone out and lose focus. But if I listen to them at 1.5 or 2 times speed, I can take that information in a lot more easily. But it's amazing how many videos do not have those functionalities enabled on them, whether it's in a training environment or online. And these simple features would be beneficial for loads of people. I know quite a few people that like to have captions on their videos to help them digest information. For those that are deaf, having captions is crucial to access material. Without captions, they can't access it at all. And so it's moving away from thinking about some of these things like being nice to have. And if they're just there all the time, no one has to request them. They're available and everyone feels more safe and approachable. And if they're spending less time worrying about, can I actually do my job? How am I going to do my job? Hopefully they can use that energy into being creative and putting their best into the roles that they're doing and problem solving or whatever it is that you need to do in the workplace. So yeah, it would be great to actually have that culture coming down from the top and being felt by everyone, where at the moment I think it's still a bottom-up movement in terms of getting those adjustments or different ways of working pushed out through the teams.
Yeah, absolutely. The technology is there already, because for most platforms you can now get transcripts, so you don't need to even have the captions on for those.
Yeah, I mean, I think AI especially has made a lot of tools more accessible. Like, I rely on AI for doing my meeting minutes, using a transcript and getting a summary to help me generate meeting minutes. It's by all no means perfect, but it takes away that pressure of me having to try and take notes whilst trying to be present in the conversation. And it means that with the transcript, I know that everything's captured. So even if the AI summary isn't great, I can go back into that transcript and pick out the information that I need to, you know, make sure those minutes are to the level of detail that I require them to be before they get sent out. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to access and use AI tools in the workplace, but I know for many that is still not fully accessible. We have Copilot in Microsoft Windows 11, but in some companies, this might be only on a case-by-case basis or certain licenses for certain individuals, and you have to request it specifically. That's a real shame, because so many people could benefit from the automation and efficiency processes that AI can give us in the workplace. It shouldn't be that you have to use a formal diagnosis to get this sort of support when it could benefit so many other people trying to make their lives a little bit more efficient and simpler in the workplace.
And there's a real worry about AI and having AI in the room and all of those aspects. But I think more and more we're now coming to realize we shouldn't be worried about the AI being there, because it's helping us. It's helping, like you say, anybody that's got a neurodiversity that can use a transcript if it's available.
Yeah, definitely. A few years ago, I was probably still very much anti-AI, hadn't cottoned on to what the uses are. Slowly, doing a lot of research and seeing how other people are using it, I've been able to give it a go. It's finding out what works for you. That's what we tried to get across at the conference last year about neurodiversity. As a whole population, we are neurodiverse. Everyone's got different brains and acts differently. Some of us are neurodivergent because our brains are wired in the non-standard way. I'm not sure if I like that terminology, but that's the easiest way to describe it. People will say, hey, I'm not neurodivergent, but I struggle with this as well. And that's exactly it. We're all neurodiverse, so we can all have differences. People may relate to certain traits that neurodivergent people struggle with, but because they don't impact their lives to a certain degree and intensity, they don't necessarily meet the threshold to get that formal diagnosis of a certain neurodivergent. They have that trait, and any support that a neurodivergent person might get to help them with that trait could also benefit that neurotypical person who experiences those same traits as well. So that's where, you know, these so-called reasonable adjustments, if you're asking them for one employee, quite a lot of the time they can benefit the whole department, the whole team, just if you gave that same opportunity to everyone for that certain way of working or that certain support tool. If you think about it more as success enablers, allowing to have an AI tool being used in your workplace could be a success enabler for many people. It allows them to access those tools that would help them with tasks that they struggle with. How many times people have had writer's block, you don't know where to start on a presentation? I used AI the other day to help me start writing a PowerPoint presentation. I had some material, I put it into AI and said, can you start helping me write a presentation? And it did. The final presentation I gave, I had to work on it and tweak it, but it really helped take away that kind of overwhelming writer's block. I just couldn't get started on that task, and was like having that sounding board. Working remotely at home on your own, you've lost that sounding board that you might have been used to, say in an office where you had a colleague sat next to you, could be like, hey, can you just have a look at this for me? And that's not so easy to replicate in a virtual environment, because you'd have to kind of constantly call or have a meeting with someone. You can't just bring them over to your desk. And actually, I found that using AI, they've become that kind of virtual companion for me in terms of a sounding board, like asking a colleague just to quickly check something for me that I would have done when I previously used to work in an office.
You make a good point about remote working, because there's quite a number of us now remote working.
Mm-hmm.
We're on global teams, so we have to be remote from the team and to a certain extent. And the AI companion can help, like you said, with the writer's block. I've used it for starting some of my blogs, for example. I don't use it for the whole blog. I'll use it just to start things off, and then I'll put my spin on things. I always look at it and go, oh, I don't particularly like that. Let's change that. So, yeah, I think the more we can start embracing AI and learning about it, the more we can then move forward and use it. And like you say, it's for everyone. And that's the whole message of it, inclusivity, is for everyone. So if we think about the healthcare space, I recently was on a, I can't think what it was now. I think it was International Coaching Federation Global Leaders Forum. And we had a session on DEIB. And we had a session there where a doctor from the US came on. And because of her ethnicity, she was overlooked for so many places. But she was persistent and carried on. And she's now quite a famous doctor in the US. But I wonder if you've got any examples of a similar type of thing.
In pharmaceutical statistics?
Or just in the healthcare industry in general?
I think if I think of my own experiences, being female has definitely not helped, especially with trying to explore my late diagnosis of autism, spending a lot of time lately researching neurodivergent conditions because of my own. Most models, particularly like for autism and ADHD, the diagnostic criteria are based off of white young boys. And if you think specifically ADHD, because that's quite sometimes a physical one presented in boys, you think of hyperactivity boys that can't sit still in the classroom and are running around. For females and other minority groups, different ethnicities, different religions, that's even harder to get those diagnoses, because the way that our neurodivergence presents is not written as in the textbooks. In, for example, ADHD, a lot of the hyperactivity is internal and in the mind for females. So it may present as anxiety and overthinking, but actually that is a symptom or a trait of that can be seen of ADHD and however hyperactivity presents itself. It's that your thoughts don't stop and they're constantly running away with you. Same with autism. I remember there was a question on my diagnosis survey that I had to take part in about, you know, do I develop a strong interest for things? It was giving examples like trains and planes and all these really kind of very male characteristic things. Yeah. And I was like, well, I don't really care about trains and planes. What I do care about, for me, it's like, I love Disney. Growing up, I used to be obsessed with certain types of dolls like Barbies, and I would line them all up and play with them and have them all in a row and have them all ordered and get very upset when my little sister would come crawling through and knocking them all down. That apparently was just a little girl playing. They didn't see necessarily that to the extent that I had interest in those subjects is where you start to fall into the term I'm a huge fan of special interests for people with neurodivergence, where we have such a intense focus and get so much joy out of them compared to a normal level of enjoyment. That's definitely something I've witnessed, and I noticed it in my own struggles. Even though I've got a formal diagnosis of autism, I self-identify or self-diagnose as AUDHD, because I think I sometimes have ADHD tendencies as well. But I've tried and gone through a diagnostic procedure for ADHD and was basically told no on the same day that I didn't meet the criteria because I couldn't recall enough evidence in childhood. I have very poor memory recall, which doesn't help.
That's
but they kind of just said that there is a lot of overlap with autism and ADHD, but there are sometimes some differences. And I think there's some shocking facts out there, like 80% of autistic people actually also have ADHD, but they can't be diagnosed together. You have to get separate diagnoses. The clinicians that diagnosed me said most of my traits and symptoms could be put down to my autism, and I didn't meet enough criteria to have the separate diagnosis as well. So yeah, even then, the fact that I've now got the autism diagnosis, I think, has blocked me a bit from clinicians seeing beyond that and what else could be going on in other neurodivergent conditions. Because if you've got one, you've most likely got several others as well. And I think it would be great to have more of a neurodiversity screening to assess where you are, because of the spiky profile in neurodivergence, there's sometimes a lot of overlap in these spiky profiles across different conditions. So yeah, it would be great to have that all considered as a whole collective, rather than you have to go through a separate diagnostic for every single condition, which is a very draining process in itself. So absolutely. Yeah, I hope that speaks to a similar example that you've brought up.
It does. It gives your experience. And by the way, I remember that question as well. And I'm thinking, I have no interest in trains, I planes. That's an interesting one. So if we move on to the session at the PSI conference, what can people expect at that session who are going to be attending?
Yeah, great question. We've made the session quite interactive. So it will probably be quite different to a typical conference session that you might be used to. It's more pitched as a workshop than a parallel session. Hopefully you'll come in, we'll have a brief introduction by some of our team, and then we're going to actually start you off straight with an activity. I won't go into too many details about it yet. You'll have to come along to the conference to find out what that will be. But we're going to start off with an activity, and then we're going to have a presentation. We've partnered with a company called Inclusive Employers for this presentation. We'll have Addison Barnett giving us a brief presentation about inclusion practices before we put you back into an activity again explore that afterwards. Once you've had the chance to work through that second activity, we'll be bringing the room together for a discussion around inclusion and a few things like that. Really encourage that room discussion. We're trying to model some different practices as well in our conference session, practicing what we preach. We've got a great space at the Wembley Stadium, so hopefully we're trying to see if we can work a few things out with the logistics of the room, hopefully have it a bit set up in a bit more of a flexible way than you might see for previous workshop sessions. We'll be encouraging people to move around if they need to take a break. The session is about 90 minutes. People need to step out of the room and take a breather. We'll be making that really clear from the start so that people don't have to feel awkward if they need to slip out the back of the room for whatever reason. That's perfectly fine. I think we're trying to build that flexibility into our session. It's going to be highly based around the discussion and what is made on the day with the group. So we'll have some materials that we'll be sharing with you. There'll be handout as well. In fact, I think we've hopefully already shared our slides. So when the conference app or launches at the end of the week, you should be able to see the slides already for our session. So if you want to be able to have a look to pre-digest that information and see what's coming up so you can kind of start to process it before you come to the session, please do go ahead and have a look at the information there. There'll be a handout available in the app after the session that you can take away with you. We're hoping for people to come along, have some great discussions. One of the big key things about inclusion is just, as I said, having that open, flexible mindset. No one is going to be an expert in any condition in how to get this right. But I think as long as we're always thinking and having this actively in our minds of whenever you're doing something at work, is there a way I can make this better for everyone? How am I acting? Is it being a barrier for anybody? Then we're only going to be able to, strive for better and keep making it more open. And sometimes you do need to stop and maybe speak to your team and be like, hey, is this working? Do we need to make any changes? Is this working for you? But try and lead with that and not just being reliant on people to say, hey, I need this, and actually suggesting it from a start hopefully makes for that more inclusive, open environment where people feel a bit braver to hopefully speak up and advocate for themselves and advocate for what they need. Because it is a shame that there will be quite a lot of people with especially disabilities that do not feel safe to disclose in the workplace for fear of stigma and repercussions that they feel it might hold them back from promotions, being given certain opportunities. They might not be understood, respected. And so they struggle silently at home. And as you say, in a remote environment, that is all too easy to do. You may be able to see if a colleague was struggling and offer to help, but people can use remote working to their advantage and hide their struggles so they can give off this impression We call that masking in the neurodivergent community. If you're giving off this impression that everything's fine, kind of like a swan or a duck, everything's cool and calm above the water, but below the surface, it's frantic, chaotic.
If I can pick up on there's so many things going around in my brain, by the way. One of the things you talked about was actually asking, if you're a leader, asking people where they are, what they're thinking, all of those aspects. You talk a lot about habits of trust, and two of the habits are choosing to be open and choosing to be kind. Most people will then go, well, how can a leader always be kind? Well, that's what a leader should be doing. Actually, if anything, if a leader's kind to their team, you'd be surprised how much trust is brought into that team. Being open and being kind shows a bit of vulnerability for the leader as well. I think that builds trust within the team.
Yeah.
Wondering what you're thinking as I actually saying those things.
So when you're saying that, I have a Disney quote pop into my head. I think it's from Cinderella. If you can't be anything, be kind. And yeah, that's definitely something that you're taught as children, right? That seems so common sense that when you think about it. But sometimes, as you say, it's just as a leader, I'm not expecting leaders to know the answers or know everything, especially if you come along and say, hey, I've got this condition and they may have never heard of it before. Or I need this source of support and they've never had to work in that way. But being open, being understanding, sometimes just feeling heard can go such a long way. So if someone's say, hey, I find this a struggle, can we try and work together to find a way to make it less of a struggle? Hearing that, appreciating it, and then actively following through on how to work to a solution, not just saying, oh yeah, sometimes I struggle with that too, but we just move on with it. That can be really belittling to people, that their struggles are not valid. And it's like, well, hey, yeah, I struggle with that too, but you just have to get on with it, I'm afraid, that sort of thing. I think we're in that kind of age where there are so many tools and solutions available to us. Why do we have to settle for things being a struggle? There are so many ways to make things better and improve. Sometimes it's the fear of change for people. They don't want to change how things are being done, or that's just the way it's always done around here. We're just going to keep going with it because the change seems unknown and scary. And this is coming from somebody that historically struggles with changes and things being unknown. I do not like that, but sometimes you have to embrace it because that's the only way you're going to be able to move forward or make some changes that you need. It's that short-term pain for long-term gain, I see. So if I have to go through something that's a bit tricky and unknown in the short term so that hopefully we can figure it out for the long term and it can be better overall, I would see that as a win rather than just going, well, we're just going to stick with it and it's not working, but it's too hard to figure out how to do. If people feel belittled, the trust breaks down, they don't feel comfortable coming to people and sharing their concerns, expressing when they might need help and support. And that's the thing, things can be dynamic. Your support needs can be dynamic. One day, 1 week, 1 month, you might be fine with something and then something changes and suddenly you find yourself not being able to do that. And I think it's ironic. So many people don't necessarily understand disability. Disability awareness is probably one of the least spoken, kind of underrepresented groups in the workplace. You know, we've got lots of big movements that go on for things like Pride and Black History Month, and they get their time and get spoken about, I think, more than sometimes Disability Awareness Month or Disability Pride Month that's coming up in July, for example, doesn't seem to get the same sort of visibility, I don't think. Disability is probably one of the groups that most people will be affected by in their life. You can be temporarily disabled if you break your leg or twist your ankle because you're on crutches and you're going to be disabled by society if you're trying to get around somewhere and you've not got flat accessible surfaces if you're on crutches or in a wheelchair. Most people will probably be touched by a relative. Aging sometimes can be disabling. You may not have a physical diagnosed condition, but just because when you age and you become less physically able, you are then sometimes disabled by your own society and environment because you can't get up the stairs without a stair rail anymore. And if there's no stair rail, what are you going to do? Everyone in their life is probably going to be touched by that at some point. Disabled for some reason has this kind of negative, dirty conversation with it. People don't like speaking about it, especially in the world of the neurodivergent community, people love to talk about things being a superpower and all of that nowadays. And I think sometimes you just need to talk about things how they are. Or we don't even need to bring up necessarily disability at all. If things are just inclusive and people can just talk about their environment rather than them as a person. I saw a really interesting post this morning on LinkedIn where someone was having these different phrases based on giving feedback about somebody. One of the key ones that stood out for me was like, this person struggles with keeping up in large room discussions. And they actually reframed it to, this person thrives working in small dynamic group discussions. There, you've that language and mindset, you've taken it from a negative, this is a problem for the person, they're not accommodating their work environment, actually going, hey, that environment isn't suitable for this person, this is the environment that suits them best. So if we actually take that mindset to think about the environment and what are the issues with the environment and the tools and the ways of working and how they're not working for the people or the person, rather than going, here's a person or a group of people and they're not working with the environment that we're expecting them to, they're the problem, that's a negativity. It's such a mindset shift. And I think putting it on that environment works with the social model of disability, but we are disabled by the environment and the lack of support that we need, versus the medical model of disability, which is all very diagnosis heavy. It's on the person and there's something wrong with you because you've got X, Y, and Z that you cannot do. I think that's the really powerful mindset shift that I'm seeing coming through the community, especially for disability. But I think it has so much more beyond that, because you could say that sort of comment about anyone, regardless of they've got a disability or not. And if we take that negative away from the person and put it more on, right, there's a struggle here, but actually what is wrong with the environment or the tool or the way of working, I think that could have such a powerful shift forward for making things more inclusive in terms of blaming the environment and the tools rather than the person.
Yeah. And I like the mindset shift from the negative to the positive. In a way, the leader could do that with the environment. Yeah, how can we change this environment to make this better for you?
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying how can we make this environment be better for everybody, but it could be, well, we make it better for you, make it better for you, make it better for all of the team. Individuals make up the team, so you're making it better for everybody if you find out what's going to make it better for one person, or make it better for all of the team, individual.
Yeah.
Like that idea of focusing on the positive.
Yeah, and it comes back to that mindset shift of thinking success enablers rather than adjustments. What can we do to help people thrive in the workplace? And I think that's why we really spent a lot of time and thought about the name of our session as well at the conference. Allowing people to thrive, that's the main goal here. What can we do for anyone to be able to do that, and getting the best out of the people? Because if you look after the people will look after the business. If you're getting the best out of your people, that's going to be the best for the business in the long term as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got 3 minutes left of our time together, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. And I'll be at the session, and I'm going to call it the workshop. And I know I'm going to enjoy the workshop, and I know anybody else will. Perhaps in the last 3 minutes, you could maybe talk about, what message would you give to leaders who may be attending the PSI conference, it's about attending the workshop?
Well, I would say that you don't know until you try something. That's the mindset I'm trying to adopt. You may think you're being inclusive, but until you come to this session and get involved in our discussions, you may realize that actually you've got some biases that you weren't aware of, or some knowledge gaps that you didn't know. And I think that's what we're trying to get out of the session. It's not going to be a session that's going to aim to teach you everything. It's just something to hopefully help spark that discussion or need for self-awareness and understanding going forward. Inclusive employers will be holding a roundtable discussion during the Tuesday lunch break. So if that's also after coming to our session, if you've enjoyed the discussion and you want to see what you can do more, then I highly encourage you to go along to that roundtable discussion at lunchtime. I think it is on a limited availability, so do check the app for the details about that. But that will hopefully also be a great opportunity to speak more with inclusive employers who can kind of give a bit more detail from a kind of employer perspective of things that should be being done and being considered to make sure that we're hitting goals and benchmarks and guidances in these criteria. But for anyone else, whether you're a leader or not and you're attending and you're curious about this topic, please come and track me down at the conference. I'd love to have a chat with you. I will also be around during the Monday poster session with myself and a few out of the PSI D&I working group. We have a poster on Monday evening where we will be introducing the working group, and we want to speak to people, get some feedback about how inclusive you think the PSI community is being. We want to see what we can better do for our members. If you've got any ideas and thoughts, please come along and share them with us. The D&I working group, myself and a few other members from Inclusive Employers, will be on the PSI stand during the break times on Tuesday as well. So if you don't manage to get a seat to our session, because it is limited, I think we're going to have about 64 spots, which, considering the conference is maybe at over 500 attendees, that's only about 10% people may be lucky to get a spot. So come along early if you want to get a seat. If you don't manage to get into the session, feel free to come to any of those other activities we're doing and have a chat with us on LinkedIn. Please drop me a message. I'm always happy to connect and to discuss more about this as well.
Fabulous. So with that, Emma, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm thanking you for being on the Friday podcast with me today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.